To order, and we'll change the order. I just love moving these bills around. We'll listen to 3019 first. Open a hearing on 3019, and Patrick, a little rundown.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. House Bill 3019 allows state and local governments to exercise certain powers involving facilities related to railroad operations. We've received a no revenue impact statement and have not received a fiscal impact statement on the measure as of yet.
Thank you, Patrick. And Jack Kreider. You can come up. Pat, come on up. Can't. That's everybody.
This is your whole list, sir.
Absolutely. Jake, you want to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Pat Egan, and I'm here today on behalf of the Port of Portland. Couple of things that are being distributed right now. One are Representative Hansen, who is, among others, sponsored this legislation, couldn't be here this afternoon, and so you have some of the points that I think he was going to make on this legislation, and then sort of a one-pager information sheet that I've distributed to all of your offices and talked with some of you about. 3019, in my opinion, and in the opinion of the Port, I believe, is cleanup legislation, and if you look at the one-page bill, when this bill was originally passed, which I believe was the 1985 session, it provided for the ability for the state government, local government, cities, counties, port districts, and special districts to own railroad lines, and that was the terminology that was chosen by legislative council and by the committees at the time. In looking at that, and in looking at the notion that we're expanding our facilities, others like the Port of Tillamook Bay are expanding their facilities in some of the other jurisdictions that I've indicated on the one pager there, I think intending to expand some of their facilities, I think it makes sense that we have a statute that is absolutely clear. And so the statute right now, in the opinion of our legal counsel, is not clear because it just says railroad line. Railroad line could be interpreted as just the tracks and the ties. And certainly I think that that's not a reasonable, rational interpretation, but it could be interpreted that way. What we're intending by adding the language relative to facilities related to rail operations is to make absolutely clear to everyone looking at the statute and those that are operating under it, us, Port of Tillamook Bay and others, that it includes facilities like loading and unloading docks, repair yards, container yards, all of the things associated with running a railroad line. So that's long and short of it. We've checked in with the short lines and others, and I believe everyone across the board is okay with this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I'll go ahead and introduce Mr. Kreider. I'm Ken Armstrong, and I represent not only the Oregon Ports Group that both of these gentlemen are members of, but also the Oregon Short Line Railroad Association, of which Mr. Kreider is a member of, is Port of Tillamook Bay. And I wanted to reiterate what Mr. Egan said. Both associations support this. This is important legislation, just to make very clear what is currently being done. And with that, I'll introduce Mr. Kreider from Tillamook.
Well, very good. Thank you. My name is Jack Kreider. I'm the general manager of the Port of Tillamook Bay. I do appreciate you putting us up front here. I do have another hearing downstairs, so this will help. Clarification is critical in this. I never realized that there was an issue until we really actually took a real good look at the statute. The Tillamook line was purchased with lottery dollars back in 1989 from Southern Pacific Railroad. It was purchased to ensure that those mill jobs stay in Tillamook and that the mills are viable in Tillamook. We operate 100 miles of line from south of Tillamook into Hillsboro. We run through three different port districts, six cities, two counties. We have a variety of different operations both in Tillamook County and in Washington County. We have rock quarries in both counties. We have transloads facilities in both counties. we have passenger operations depots in both counties. State has funded heavily into this railroad, and I'm sure the Attorney General probably looked at this a long time ago and thought that we were okay. So certainly it is critical. We continue to plan on expanding our operation, which most of that will probably be in Washington County. So I think it is critical. We certainly do support this bill.
Thank you. Questions? No question. Oh, represent that. Thanks.
Never fail. Thank you. I did talk to you briefly about my question yesterday, and you said maybe I could bring it up for the rest of the panel. In your bill, it says it refers to any facilities. Who's going to be defining any facilities? What it means.
You know. Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, my own opinion and what I shared with you yesterday is, as it stands today, both the Port of Portland, Port of Tillamook, the cities that have railroad lines are operating rail-related facilities. And so the notion here, I think, is to make sure that the legislative change captures those already existing facilities. As to who would define it, if there was a rulemaking procedure through the rail division, I think that they would. I'm not sure, and I think Kelly Taylor may be here later. I'm not sure she was anticipating the bill being up first, but I think she would be able to answer the question. I'm not sure that they would do a rulemaking on this, and I think because it's so broad, any facilities may not need further definition, but I think Kelly might be the best person to answer that question.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Anyone else to testify on 3019? Public hearing and open the work session on 3019.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move that we move House Bill 3019 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Brun moves 3019 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Just briefly, I want to say why I was asking about that. Because since it's allowing these facilities and railroad lines to operate for profit, I'm just afraid, I was just concerned, not afraid necessarily, that the definition of any facility could grow and grow to encompass something so to the point where it is in direct competition with private industry. And that was my concern. But
you know,
I'll just keep an eye on it.
Michael, we're ready.
Representative
Hunt?
Aye.
Representative
Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Oh, excuse me.
Chair Gilman?
Aye.
Motion carried. No. Representative Boone, do you want to carry this bill?
Thank you.
Okay. We'll open a public hearing on 2762.
Mr. Chair. Okay, here we go. House Bill 2762 requires that one in every four accessible parking spaces for disabled persons be van accessible, or if more than four spaces are designated as accessible, that one in every eight be van accessible. It outlines signage requirements for van accessible parking and marking requirements for the access aisles. Requires that the Department of Transportation issue wheelchair placards or decals. Prohibits persons from parking in wheelchair accessible spaces that are signed or marked wheelchair use only unless the person's vehicle displays a wheelchair placard or decal. We have not received a fiscal impact statement on the bill as of yet, but I believe the Department of Transportation can speak to that if the committee has any questions.
Okay. Kevin O'Reilly and Ronald Edwards.
and members of the committee. My name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm with the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. About a year ago, Mr. Edwards came to our organization and asked a little assistance in passing a bill or getting legislation passed, or maybe a rules change to ODOT, some way of helping his wife, who he feared for his wife's safety. His wife was newly injured, newly disabled, and had run across a few situations in parking lots where she was almost whacked by a car. He came to us and talked to us about van accessible parking. Over the year or so, we talked about it and we came up with what we hope would be a good solution that would have minimal, if any, impact, adverse impact on anyone. We felt that taking the current van accessible space and making it wheelchair user only, when we have a total of 100 or more spaces, would still provide everybody the opportunity to use an accessible space and not adversely impact the small business. As I'm looking over the bill, I notice that it doesn't mention 100 or more spaces. And we feel that that should be added to the bill so we, again, don't adversely impact a small business. In the bill, you'll see a bit of a color scheme written in. Well, that came up with a bunch of old guys sitting around a table drinking coffee. It's not necessarily. ODOT's much better at determining what would be useful in this situation. We just think that some high contrast would be helpful. Along with the letters I gave you, you'll see one from the Oregon Disabilities Commission from Mr. Ackerman. In there, Mr. Ackerman mentions a situation where he'll find it's sort of a good idea of what's going on. You'll find an island business, a standalone business, which puts its accessible parking on the side of the business so the disabled person will not have to cross a vehicle lane between the parking and the storefront. Often what we'll notice is that persons who can ambulate will park in front of the store and walk in and ignore the accessible parking on the side. What they're really after is close-in parking. What their need is parking close to the front. They don't need the access aisle. A wheelchair user needs an access aisle to safely exit and enter their vehicle. And we're just trying to help preserve that. And there was a third letter I brought along from an individual, Mr. Brown, who asked me to bring. He wasn't able to be here today. And it kind of shows a bit of the passion some citizens feel about this subject. It seems it's over the years, we've increased the number of users of accessible spaces. We haven't increased the number of accessible spaces. It's sort of a supply and demand. And it's going to get worse as the rest of us get older. With age comes disability. And at this time, if you have any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them, but I would ask that you hold them until Mr. Edwards has made his presentation. He may answer questions. I haven't.
Thanks, Kevin. I think we'll go ahead and get your testimony, and then we'll open it for questions.
Thank you, Chairman Gilman. My name is Ron Edwards. I live in Lebanon. And as Mr. O'Reilly's kindly stated, my wife is a wheelchair user now. And when she drives her vehicle, it's not safe in the parking lot for her. So we actually support House Bill 2762. And what happens is when she cannot use a van accessible parking space, the only place left to park are other parking spaces with no extra space. So that means we can either straddle a white line someplace in the corner of the parking lot and she can get out and in. But in our past experience, we've had motorcycles park alongside. She's stuck. She can't get out. She can't move. She can't do anything. Or a small car like an MG. So it's very difficult for her to get in and out of the van. Secondly, when she leaves the van and goes to the store or to a doctor's appointment, she has no aisles to drive her wheelchair in. And she's no taller than perhaps an 8-year-old child, and she doesn't move nearly as quickly in the wheelchair. So time and again, different people with her have pounded on fenders or trunks or whatever to get people's attention. So what we're basically asking with House Bill 2762 is simply 1 in 4 and then 1 in 8. At 101 parking spaces, we are asking that the already in place, van accessible parking space be changed to wheelchair user only. We're not asking for any changes to the federal mandate or greater participation, i.e. more parking spaces. We're not asking for that, or the state. All we're asking is that the inaccessible parking space be made wheelchair user only, starting at parking space number 101. When I was putting this together, I had the opportunity to go around and talk to different small business owners. And they didn't understand what 1 and 4 and 1 and 8 meant. They thought 5 total parking spaces, i.e. 1 van accessible with 4. Actually, what it is that we have 1 van accessible parking space set forward by the federal and state requirements for 100 parking spaces. So for 100 parking spaces, you have 4 total, 1 van accessible and 3 accessible spaces. So it's basically 1 and 24. At 101, it then goes 50. And starting at 200, then it goes to 100 regular parking spaces per accessible parking space. So I handed up a flyer called Van Accessible Parking on pages 3, 4, and 5. I've included pictures of different kinds of vans with their lifts and the different types of lifts that they have. And also in the verbiage that I included with that are discussions on how much room is actually needed for people to get in and out of the van. On page number 6, I went to a parking lot. I asked the manager if I could just take a look and take pictures of their parking just to show what it is. You will see in that parking there will be a picture of a blue car in the left parking spot. That person is parking in a van accessible parking space. Kiwampus facing is another parking space, and you can see in the background there's another line of two where there are no vans at all in the van accessible parking spaces, and we find out to be about 80 or 90%. I'm a counter in my mind. I just kind of follow that stuff all the time, just click, click, click. So about 80 or 90% of the time, I either drop her off at the door if I'm driving, go out and find someplace else to park, or if my wife is driving, she's way out in the back end of the parking lot. As Mr. O'Reilly said, I'm a baby boomer, and one of the things that I've seen is more and more people using wheelchairs. So there's going to be a bigger push on the number of people that are going to be using handicapped parking. We have military that's working now, and always accidents. I have spoken to different people on what they would consider problems with this particular request that I'm making today. The biggest problem that most people have is they don't understand what we're asking for. The small businessman, when he sees 1 and 4 and 1 and 8, thinks that if he has a parking setup of 10 parking spots, he's going to lose another 2 spaces, because van accessible is actually 2 spaces. It's 9 foot for the van, 8 foot for the aisle to get in and out of the out of the parking lot. I thank you for the opportunity to testify here today to you folks, and if you have questions, Mr. O'Reilly and I will do our very best to answer your questions. I'm quite passionate on this, so if I get a little exuberant, that's bear with me.
Questions? Representing Thatcher.
You looked right at me. What do you expect?
Look this way.
We've talked a couple times in my office, and I think the concept is great. And I do have a couple questions now that you're sitting here talking. The spaces are already there, supposedly, right?
Yes.
Okay. Hold up. So all we're doing is just signing it differently. Which,
yes.
If that's the case, I do need to state that I might have a conflict, since we do manufacture signs. I do. And another comment is you were going to change probably the color scheme, because black on orange usually means a temporary work zone.
we would let ODOT do that.
Right, yeah, let them do that. So there are a couple of amendments then. Okay.
Yeah,
that was about it.
The only thing we tried to do was to show that the signage would be discrete. Different.
Yes. And did you consider a time for compliance?
As soon as the bill is passed, we imagine when restriping or new construction.
Okay.
We're not asking for immediate. It's. I'll give you one example. I spoke to a manager at one of the Kaiser facilities, and they were repainting their parking lot, and he already did that on his own. So they were already restriping the parking lot.
Further questions?
I guess not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Rick Bennett.
Oh, he's here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP, Oregon. I'll be very brief. I think the previous speakers have outlined the problem or concern quite well, and just want to let you know that we support the intent of the bill. I think others can speak to the details and how it might best be resolved, but certainly appreciate your support of this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Jacqueline Zimmer. Jacqueline was back there, but I don't see her now. Your time's up, Jacqueline.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jacqueline Zimmer with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging Disabilities. I'm going to assume that you are on the disability
park. 762.
Okay, thank you very much. you're on 2762? Really? Then I've signed up on the wrong bill. I knew I wasn't supposed to be in here just yet. But you know what? It's a good bill. Should pass. No, actually, I don't have any comment. We did ask for comment from our constituency about this particular bill, and they were supportive of you adjusting the space in the parking if that's the one that you're on. I'll come back and visit you.
Thank you.
When you're on 2946.
Anyone else to testify on 2762? I closed the public hearing on 2762 and open a public hearing on 2946. Patrick?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2946 prohibits the Department of Transportation from including a person's identifying information on disabled person parking permit placards and decals issued to individuals or family members. The bill outlines the information that will be prohibited. We have received a no revenue impact statement and minimal fiscal impact to this measure.
Thank you. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, State Representative Dave Hunt, excuse me, from Clackamas County. And I should be joined by my Representative Krieger momentarily. He may walk in. You have a letter that is going to be handed out probably after Mike gets off the phone from one of his constituents, so I'll let him focus on that. You also have a set of Dash 1 amendments that I'll touch on in a minute. The basic problem here that we found ourselves in is an issue of identity theft as it impacts those who have disabled parking permits in Oregon. One of the things you'll see referenced in the letter that's being handed out is a lot of people are blaming the department, blaming DMV. Why are you requiring us to put our personal information, our driver's license number, in a way that is publicly visible on the disabled parking placard? Well, it's not, I would argue, it's not DMV's fault. It's our fault because we need to adjust the statute. And this bill attempts to do that. Obviously, when the department began to put that personal information on the disabled parking placards, identity theft was not the issue it was today. So it's not something that I think really could have been forecast, but it clearly is a problem now, as the letter before you amply illustrates and other testimony that you'll receive today will illustrate. We've got an opportunity to still have disabled parking permits, to still have them in a way that will be usable and enforceable by the department, by law enforcement, as you'll hear in later testimony, but without issuing any personal information in a way that is publicly visible. And the I would note that on page 1 of the bill, line 14, that's just an LC housekeeping measure. It's one of those things that pops up in the bill that has nothing to do with the content of the bill. They're just cleaning up the statute. The meat of the bill is on page 2, under subsection 7, where it specifically delineates the items that cannot be included in a visible way on that disabled parking placard. You'll notice in the dash ones, the one substantive change in the dash ones is near the end of the dash one amendments, where it does allow the department to require using a number that may contain up to 4 digits of a driver's license number. So, therefore, that gives them yet another option that they could utilize to still have a placard that is enforceable, but with only 4 digits of a driver's license number, that's something that really cannot be subject to identity theft. So, this very simple, very focused bill, as you'll hear from my good colleague, further reasons why we should support this. It is supported by AARP and other senior organizations, by the Paralyzed Vets and other disabled organizations, by the Oregon Credit Union Association and other financial organizations, all really trying to get at the dual goals of maintaining viable disabled parking permits and protecting the identity of those who have them.
Chair Gilman.
How are you today?
Well, I had a note here to ask if you passed your school zone bill yet. It's at the top of my list.
Monday.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. For the record, I'm Wayne Krieger, state rep from District 1. I wanted to read a letter from a constituent of mine, Joyce Wayford from Brookings. It's a little bit long, but I think it maybe shows the concern and maybe some of the seniors and disabled have. I'm not sure who to contact, but I'm hoping that you may be able to help me, as well as many other disabled persons in the state of Oregon. I really feel that they are violating our civil rights. I am a disabled person who carries a disabled passenger car to my automobile. It is required to be hanging on my rearview window at any time that I am parked in a disabled parking space. And then she refers to, I believe it's ORS 811-605, contents of individual placer card. An applicant for individual placer card or decal issued by the Department of Transportation under ORS 811-602 must have a driver's license, a disability golf cart driver's permit, or an identification card issued by the department. The placer card or decal shall be valid so long as the license, permit, or identification card is valid and may be renewed when the license, permit, or card is renewed. The driver's license, golf cart, driver permit, or identification card number, or the person to whom the card is issued, and an expiration date that is visible from outside the vehicle when the plastic card or decal is displayed on the vehicle. The expiration date shall be the same as the expiration date on the driver's license, golf cart driver's permit, or identification card of the holder or the plastic card. The reason is because it is the law. I feel that this is an invasion of my privacy. This placer card has my Oregon driver's license number and expiration date written in black marker pen and punched on it in plain sight for everyone who looks through my car window to see. With as much identity theft that is going on today, I do not feel that this is right. Even the banks tell you not to have your driver's license printed on your checks anymore. But still, the Oregon Department of Transportation is requiring me to have my driver's license written on the disabled card for everyone to see, or they will refuse to issue me a replacement. I feel that this is discriminating against me because I am disabled, and at the same time is violating my civil rights to my own privacy. Everyone knows also that the driver's license expires on your birth date. And she goes on with just a couple other points here that kind of continues this same train of thought. I know that the good Representative Hunt has covered most of the technical details of it, but when I saw the bill and Representative Hunt asked me to speak just briefly on it and brought it to my attention, it relates, I think, very strongly with what we're finding with the identity theft statewide that has to do with meth. What is the motivator behind a lot of this? A lot of it is these drug people, the users of drugs, have become very innovative about picking up parts of people's ID and putting it together whether it comes out of their garbage can and off their plastic card of this issue. So I think this would go a long way, and I think it's a reasonable remedy to help protect these disabled persons.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? That's it. Hold it.
I just looked at you. I didn't say a thing. I don't have any questions, Chair.
If I could just note, Mr. Chair, the reason that the fiscal impact is eliminated in this is, you'll notice under the last section, it only requires the department to issue them as they are either newly issued or renewed, not to recall them all. So it won't address the problem immediately, but every new one that's issued from here on out or renewed will be addressed.
At least we'll be working towards that.
And we're all looking forward to Monday.
That's right.
Thank you both.
Thank
you. Kevin?
Chair Gilman, members of the committee, my name is Kevin O'Reilly. I'm with the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America. And we support House Bill 2946 for many years now. Since 1991, the Oregon Paralyzed Veterans of America has been involved in voluntary enforcement programs for the parking. And generally one of the ways they look to see if that person is the person that a placard was issued to is by looking at the license and the number. There's other ways to do it. And so having the license number on the placard isn't necessary. And since it would help cut down on identity theft, which is becoming more and more of a problem, it would be probably a good thing to do. And thank you very much. Any questions? I'll be happy to answer.
Thanks, Kevin. Questions?
Thank you very much.
Rick Bennett.
I'll just go like this so we can see.
Bye day in here.
Thank you once again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Rick Bennett representing AARP Oregon. We support House Bill 2946. In fact, an AARP member contacted me regarding this issue last year, and as indicated, I, in trying to determine just what the facts were, found that that was the way of the statute, and in fact was directed that if I wished to contact my state legislators to express my concerns, I should do so. And indeed, in talking with Representative Hunt, I certainly appreciate him bringing this forward for your consideration. I think it's a relatively easy problem to resolve. And I know other states have been able to do this without any difficulty, and we certainly appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. Questions? Pam Levitt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pam Levitt with the Credit Union Association of Oregon. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to testify. I wanted to first thank and commend Representative Hunt and Representative Krieger for a wonderful bill. We are working very hard this session to look at all legislation related to identity theft. As you'll see in my testimony that's being passed out, I gave you just a broad sweeping definition of identity theft, and some of the material that we share with our membership on preventing and identity theft and recovering. I just thought we'd give you just a really brief background on the issue and how our members are really working to solve this issue. I also want to say that credit unions aren't the only ones working on this issue. It is definitely a collective effort. We participate in the Financial Institution Security Task Force, banks, credit unions, law enforcement. We've participated in DMV's Identity Theft Task Force, which includes agencies and law enforcement and financial institutions. There are several bills in the both the House and Senate, some bills in your committee that I've sat through related to the use of the driver's license, and other bills in the Senate that we're participating in work groups. So it is a collective effort. Identity theft affects so many consumers, and it's certainly on the rise. You see the numbers, $5 billion nationally every year. And so our job is to educate our members on what they can do, and I provide provided you some background, and when it happens, do the best that we can to help that member through the situation. I emailed some of our compliance officers and got a couple stories yesterday. A credit union down in Klamath Falls had a member in his 60s who had his driver's license and check stolen. And a young man went into Boeing Credit Union Washington State, applied for a loan, and when the credit checks went through, obviously there were some concerns, and they were able to arrest the young man all before the member in Klamath Falls at the credit union knew anything about the loss of the driver's license and the stolen checks. So there are many efforts going on. Another credit union reports that a woman had her kids, friends of her kids, came into her house, stole checks and her driver's license, and they were able to counterfeit the driver's license by changing it somehow, and were able to use it for a while. So we hear stories like that every day in financial institutions. So this bill, as it relates to the disabled parking passes, is a wonderful step. There are many ways that we can look at throughout the statutes to protect personal information, and we certainly want to be partners. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thanks, Pam. Questions? No, don't seem to. Jacqueline, I'll bet you want to testify on this bill. Even though you aren't signed up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jacqueline Zimmer with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities. And I apologize for the confusion. That was my favorite line I learned in Costa Rica, where they say, there's been a confusion. That way there's no blame, huh? We want to go on record as supporting this concept, and we're appreciative of Representative Hunt for bringing it up and for including us in the thought process of this. And if I could, I'm just going to apologize to Representative Hunt, because I had sort of this brainstorm just a moment ago. I was out in the hall thinking when you called me in. And actually, I'm wondering if there isn't a way for us to consider some sort of device that people can put over their drive, over their permits now, because the permits, I think you reissue them every 4 years, unless it's a temporary permit. And so I'm not sure, as we kind of sped through this bill, but I'm not sure that we gave any consideration to people who might want to go ahead and make that change now rather than waiting. And I'm thinking that perhaps the Department of Motor Vehicles, since they have a system for marking your driver's license that can't be copied, I think they call it a coast, what's the word for that? There's a coast imaging system or something. If there isn't a label that couldn't be created for people to just cover their current ID with, and then we would also avoid the cost of creating new placards for people and whatnot. So I'm just wondering if the committee would give some consideration to that as well, or let the department think it through. But
thank you, Jacqueline. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is that the kind of thing you think could be addressed in the process within the department?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, I think that I think the Department of Motor Vehicles can be trusted to consider an option for people, even though the language isn't in the bill. I think they can sort of be directed and suggested that they would follow through on that, because they're working on it with other identification issues that they're currently there's been a lot of publicity about. So I would say that perhaps a call from you might generate their cooperation, and if in fact you didn't feel it, then maybe it would cause you to want to add an amendment to it somewhere else. But I think it can be done.
We want to remember that we don't have a fiscal impact.
Correct.
And we don't want to ask the department to do something that would create a fiscal impact. But if they could do it without that, I think it would be a great idea. They're back in the back of the room, so I'm sure they're hearing you.
Right. I'm hoping they're not upset with me. I'm not doing so hot today already, so.
further questions? No.
Okay, thanks, Jack.
You're welcome.
Anyone else testify on 2946?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Susan Schneider with the City of Portland. I just wanted to say that We appreciate the efforts of Representative Hunt to include us in the discussion about how placards get enforced, which is why we had some questions about the bill. The amendment, the Dash 1 amendment, addresses our concerns, and we look forward to working with DMV on it and support the bill as with this amendment in it.
Questions? Anyone else on 2946? I don't know why I want to do that. Public hearing on 2946 and open a work session on 2946. Representative?
Before I make a motion, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say I think it's the first bill we've read all session that neither Representative Thatcher nor Representative Burley have asked a single question on it. I'm shocked.
What is that supposed to mean?
I'm sure you can dream up a question.
We suspend rules and go back to the
I think I have a question.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 2946.
Representative Hunt moves the Dash 1 amendments to 2946. Any discussion? Any objection? They're adopted.
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2946 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Hunt moves 2946 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Mike?
Representative Beyer?
Aye.
Representative Bones?
Excused. She's standing right there.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Yes.
Representative Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Chair Gilman?
Aye.
Representative
Boone? Aye. Thank you.
Carries. Representative Hunt, I'm assuming you'd like to carry this bill.
I have it.
Mr. Chair, I move that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Burley to vote on House Bill 3019.
Representative Hunt moves we suspend the rules and allow Representative Burley to vote on 3019. Any objection? Hearing none, how do you vote?
Yes.
Thank you.
No questions.
And we'll open a public hearing on the bill that most of you came here to listen about, I guess, 2165. A little summary, huh, Patrick?
Sure, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2165 establishes in statute the Local Officials Advisory Committee to advise the Oregon Transportation Commission and Department of Transportation on the implementation of laws and policies and the development of and implementation of a seamless transportation system. Included in your packet, you will find Dash 3 amendments, which create a sunset clause for the bill, Dash 5 amendments, which include the provisions of the Dash 1's inclusion that I believe the committee heard originally on the 16th, and as well as additional provisions. I believe the association will speak to those. And the Dash 6 amendments, which add members of metropolitan planning organizations and mass transit districts to the committee. The measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means. We have received a no revenue and no fiscal impact statement on the bill.
Thank you, Patrick. Don Lindley. And Art, you're on here too.
Welcome to Starbucks. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And I wish to thank the chair and the members of the committee for having the second public hearing and possible work session on this bill. Since your last meeting, we have had some discussions with the League of Oregon Cities, with the Governor's Office, and also ODOT with regard to the concept that was submitted by ODOT at the public hearing to look at a revised or new memorandum of understanding between AOC, LOC, and ODOT in lieu of this bill. We had a meeting of all of the interested parties. That meeting was back on April 6th at this point. And at that meeting, there was a couple of, I won't say necessarily issues, but comments by a representative of the governor's office with regard to the amendments that we had drafted at that time. And as you recall, the Dash 1 amendments were presented to the commission at the initial public hearing on this matter. As a result of that meeting back in April, and the comments from the governor's office, we've generated the Dash 5 amendments that are before you. And those, the first page of the Dash 5 amendments are similar to what you've seen in the past. And I just would call your attention again to Section 1, which provides for some a statement by the legislature that it is in the public interest to bring the owners, and again I say the owners, of the state highways, county roads, and city streets together to ensure that the interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets function in an efficient and effective manner. And then it goes on. With that as legislative direction, we believe that this really strengthens the relationship between the cities, the counties, and the state, looking at how we manage and how we effectively can provide for a surface transportation, that is the roads, the streets, and the highways within the state to meet the needs of Oregon residents and also those people that are either a tourist to the state or passing through. The second page of the Dash of Five Amendments, I want to call to your attention three changes from the earlier draft that you saw. On line one, on page two, small e, the original bill had two specific positions in the governor's office specified, the governor's transportation liaison and also the local government liaison as members of the committee. The governor's office asked that we not identify specific positions and that we be and not also specify the number of positions, because a future governor may only have one person that he wants to specify to be on the committee. So we've done that by just saying employees of the governor's office designated by the governor. The other issue that was identified or raised was that's covered in lines 6 through 10. And this is where there is a direction for the committee to review, analyze, and provide recommendations for financing the state's interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets, and provide recommendations to the Transportation Commission and to the governor with regard to that. The governor's office suggested that any recommendations be consensus-based in terms of how these recommendations be developed and forwarded. And we agreed. We didn't have a problem with that. But LC had a concern about the phrase consensus-based because it's not defined anyplace. And so you'll see the second sentence in that paragraph, that the committee may not make a recommendation to the commission or the governor if there is an objection to the recommendation by any member of the committee. And that's a long way of saying consensus-based, that any recommendation would be forwarded on a consensus-based measure. So we've addressed those two issues. And then, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me call your attention to small f, lines 11 through 15. You may recall at the last hearing there was some discussion about how we have an intertie between the legislature and the local officials advisory committee and the work and the recommendations that they may generate at this point. And so F provides for a report to the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation during the off year of the legislature, a report from the committee on how on the activities of the committee and also the status of the state's interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets. So it provides that that connection between cities, counties, and states as they work on these issues dealing with how we're going to deal with the surface transportation system and the legislature. And we think that's a very good idea. That was a concept that was identified during the hearings process, and so we've included that also in the Dash 5 amendments. So those are the Dash 5s. We wholeheartedly support the Dash 5 amendments. Let me just call your attention to the Dash 3s at this point, because during the hearings, or during the earlier hearing, there was at least the concept identified of potentially maybe having a sunset to have put the local officials advisory in statute, and to have a sunset provision so that if it didn't work for some reason or another, then, you know, it would go away. And there would also be, at that point, since there would be a sunset, there would be an opportunity for us all to come forward and speak to you, the legislature, about how well or if there were problems with the local officials advisory committee as constituted in statute. When I had conversations with the chair asked if we were going to include a sunset in the in our draft amendments, and I responded that we were not, but we were asked to do that. I said we would, and therefore you see the Dash 3. It's not our druthers to have a sunset. I will share that with you, but, or however, at this point, if the committee feels it important to place the sunset in the bill, we would have no objection to that. Because it would give us the opportunity, and the sunset is drafted on a date of January 2nd, 2010. That would give us basically 4 years of working knowledge with the system based on statute, and that we would be coming back to the 2009 session to address either removal of the sunset or continuation of the sunset at that point, or the legislature could choose to let the sunset, you know, run its course, and so be it at that point. Mr. Chair, that's what we've accomplished and what we've done since we had the last hearing. We offer the Dash 5s to the committee with our full support, and I've made a comment with regard to the Dash 3, and Commissioner Lindley at this point would like to make some comments also about some of the other work that AOC has been doing since your last hearing.
Welcome, Don.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Don Lindley, County Commissioner from Lincoln County. I also serve as the Vice Chair of AOC's Transportation Committee. We had an opportunity to pull our committee together recently and review the proposed memorandum of understanding that the department has developed that would essentially replace the legislation that we have proposed. First of all, it's important to note that we were not involved in the development of that proposal, but we did have an opportunity to review it in some detail, and we, the committee, actually voted unanimously to continue the course of this particular legislation. We feel that this will accomplish really what we would like to see accomplished, and basically what that is that the and the owners of the transportation system in the state have an opportunity to sit down together and look at issues and deal with the future of our systems together. Director Warner at the last hearing indicated that what's in place now is not working, and we would certainly agree with that, and that we want to be good partners. We have been good partners with the state. Local government has been very good partners with the state for many years, but we think there needs to be a forum for us to really deal with some of the important issues that are before us, and we don't think that the current system or the proposed memorandum would accomplish that goal. I think that's about it. I don't know if there's anything, any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you, Don.
You bet.
Questions? I think there are, Don. Yes, Representative Burley.
Have you had a chance, thank you, Mr. Chair, yes, to see the Dash 6 amendment?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, yes, we have. Did see the Dash 6 amendments yesterday. My comment with regard to the Dash 6 is it is not in keeping with the primary intent of the piece of legislation that is before you. We took much care in drafting the bill and the amendments to talk and direct the activity towards the owners of the system. And when I say the system, we're talking about roads. We're talking about highways. We're talking about county roads and city streets. We're talking about the asphalt and how that whole system works together. The MPOs, at least as far as I know, do not own any of the roads or highways or city streets. They help to a degree manage those, but it's the cities and counties that do that. Transit districts have buses and facilities, you know, that use roads and streets and highways, but again, they don't own them. And so I would just go back and reiterate the intent here is to limit the discussion to the owners of the system.
Further questions? I don't see any others. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bruce Warner.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Thanks for the opportunity to comment on the bill and the amendments that you have in front of you. You should have some testimony from me in front of you right now. And again, what I just wanted to do is just reiterate again for the record, LOAC is a committee that was established by the commission through resolution, and it was a very important committee and is a very important committee to advise the department on issues of common concern regarding transportation and the use of state highway funds for highways, county roads, and streets. And what I also said, and I'll say this time, as I said last time, LOAC has changed a bit over time. There's been a number of other committees been put in place to deal with specific issues that we need to work at a technical level or at a policy level, and those have worked very, very well. So, as I said before and was said by Commissioner Lindley, again, LOAC does need to be reconstituted, and we need to figure out a different way to have that work and make sure that the mission and focus is good. You understand what the bill does. I mean, I think the intent is to promote cooperation between ODOT and local governments related to transportation and to develop that seamless transportation system that I think we all want out there. And I guess I would want to comment that the March after the March 16th meeting, you did hear about the meeting that we had in the governor's office where we attempted to get all the parties together to talk about an alternative proposal that I described. And by the way, that is attached to the testimony, so if you want to see that, you can understand what what it is we laid on the table. The two members of the governor's staff, my transportation commission chair, Stuart Foster, drove up from Medford to this meeting. And obviously none, and what frustrating, I guess, to me, I wanted to point out is none of the elected leadership from AOC or LOC attended. So we really didn't have some of the people who could tell us whether, you know, this was a good idea or a bad idea. And so we really made no progress other than what you heard is there were some good suggestions made. And I think obviously the suggestions that you heard today from AOC and their amendments do make the bill better and would address some of the concerns I think heard from you and also we heard from the governor's office. But I was disappointed that the AOC and LOC leadership was not there to really, again, advise us so we could get some closure at that point whether this was a good idea or not. So having said that I do agree that LOAC needs to change, and we do need to have a place where the executive leadership of all the organizations need to sit down and talk. I think we can do this, as I said before, without legislation. If, however, we require legislation to do this kind of committee, what I'm suggesting is I believe that there should be amendments, and I thought we would have some amendments here that you could see today, and I understand those are not here. But first off, I think we do suggest that there are other parties that should be included. And because of the system funding decisions are at the heart of most of the strategic issues that we get at when we start talking about how to fund and actually develop a seamless system, I believe that we do need to have members of the Metropolitan Planning Organizations at the table, and we do need to have members of the transit community here at the table. And that's what I suggested. It's very similar to the Dash 6 amendments you have, but again, we're not specifically, the language that we had proposed. And then secondarily, I think I agree with the concept of the Dash 3 amendments that there should be some sort of sunset along the lines that we did with the Freight Advisory Committee. See if it works. If it works, remove the sunset and allow it to go on from that point forward. So in summary, what I'd like to do is you've heard that ODOT testify that the creation of advisory committees for other purposes has been very effective. And in fact, we have proposed other committees, for example, a rail advisory committee and a transit committee be established by statute. After thinking about that further with our stakeholders, we have pulled those bills and those proposals from the table, and we believe that we can do those advisory committees through creation by the Oregon Transportation Commission. And I still view this LOAC proposal the same way. But what I want to make clear to the committee is that ODOT will continue to work with our local government partners individually or collectively through the association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities, and we'll do it with or without legislation. And so we will be there. They are partners with us. But I also believe that we are dealing with a system. It is a system that's interconnected, and if we're going to put something in statute, we may want to look a bit broader along some of the lines that have been suggested by others, which I think you will hear. I think my final comment would be that I apologize, obviously, that we are not here with a consensus for you. I think you deserve better from the cities, the counties, and the state in terms of pulling together something that would work for all of us. And I would be frustrated, and I would think you would want to tell us, with all due respect, to get together and come back to us with a proposal that you can all support. And I don't like being here and arguing about proposals before you, because I think we are all partners, and we need to have a way to develop solutions that don't need legislative intervention. So with that, I would stop and see if there's any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, for example.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps I'm interpreting the two things. I looked at the proposal that you all put forward, and I realized this is not a consensus product, but it's kind of like it was a starting point document that the department put over the state and local transportation leadership group proposal. And I'm looking at the participants on that, mm-hmm. which don't include the kind of groups that are outlined in the DAS 6 amendments. And so maybe I'm confused. Maybe there are just two different functions we're talking about with these groups. Help me understand.
Well, I think what you're seeing is we put this together as an attempt to work with League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties in the what I think is the purpose that we described up above there. The purpose that was described in the bill and was outlined in, I think, the Dash 6 amendments by Association of Oregon Counties is a bit more broad than that. And so what we're suggesting, if you want to make that broader, where really we need to focus a lot on the financing and the strategic financing of the system, we probably need to involve other people. And so if we're going to have this group do the things that were suggested in this legislative proposal, I think we may want to look to modify this. But this is as far as we got in the discussions, and really didn't have the people at the table, I said, to really have what I thought was a meaningful discussion about the merits of the individuals or the specifics of the proposal. So it's not completely fleshed out, I guess, is what I would say to you.
Yes, I guess I'm a little confused too, because I assume maybe that the Dash 6 came from ODOT, but they didn't. So do we know who they...
Yeah, we have Cindy Robert yet
okay.
to testify.
Okay,
actually,
thank you.
And Randy Tucker.
Yeah. Chair, I should clarify. I did not mention when I reviewed the amendments. It was Randy Tucker of Metro who okay. I had the amendments, the Dash 6 amendments drafted for. And I imagine he'll speak to them.
Thank you.
Fine. Don't have some problems. Any further questions? Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
Randy Tucker. And Cindy, do you want to come up too? Can you share with Randy here? Or is that a...
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Randy Tucker, Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, here to speak on behalf of the Dash, whatever they are, six, of part of the Dash 6 amendments. There's a part that I don't recognize. It didn't come from me.
There's a 6A and a 6B.
Well, possibly. So, we have, Metro has no position on the bill as introduced, really, but we would be fine with the bill with some amendments that you see before you, at least in lines 3 through 9 of the Dash 6 amendments. And let me back up a little bit. You have had presentations this session, both from Metro, about the role of Metro in regional planning, and as part of that presentation about the role of JPAC, the Joint Policy Advisory Committee on Transportation, that is convened at and includes Metro, and as well as local government officials from around the Portland region. You've also had a presentation a little while after that from metropolitan planning organizations from around the state. Just to review very briefly, there are 6 metropolitan planning organizations. They represent the urban areas of the state with populations of over 50,000. They have a significant role in the planning of transportation systems and the programming of federal money that comes into the state, having to do with transportation and air quality. And because of that role, we feel it's important that those organizations be represented on the any committee that becomes established by statute. So you can see the language in lines 3 through 9. We also collaborate closely with the transit agency in our area, TriMet, and obviously the other MPOs around the state have representation from their transit agencies, I believe. And so that's another important participant, obviously, in the development, financing, and planning of the transportation system statewide. And so that's the part of the amendment that we requested. And I'm not sure where lines 10 through 14 came from. They were not, and in fact, they're kind of problematic in the sense that, of course, it might make sense for LOC to recommend LOC members for the committee and AOC to recommend AOC members, but not necessarily the MPO members, et cetera. So it's not as I requested it, but you get the idea. And so with that, I think I will... Oh, let me just make a very brief comment on the Dash 5 amendments. Mr. Schlack pointed to the word owners as an important element in line 3 of the Dash 5 amendments. And Metro, as you know, is not an owner of the transportation system. That does not in any way diminish the role that we and JPACT play in the development, planning, financing, as I've just said, of the transportation system. And so I'm not sure that that's the proper criterion for participation in this committee. And then, of course, in line 12, you would need to add metropolitan planning organizations if you're going to go with this language. And you somehow bought into what I just said about our amendment, too. So with that, I'll see if anyone has any questions.
Just a comment from the chair. With this ownership thing, Oregonians own all of these systems. And the Department of Transportation or the League of Oregon Cities or the Association of Oregon Counties are not the owners. It's Oregonians.
Agreed.
Well, and I just want to talk about that just a bit, too, and clear something up, because in my opinion, the intent of the bill was about the roads, the state, county, and city roads, just the surface roads, and not including other things and other districts that run, like, in, for example, Metro and Mass Transit that run, like, MAX or buses or things like that, because I think that that makes it a different picture. And so what I think has happened here is that, Randy, you have had drafted something to put into this bill, but not, you know, to their liking, right? Because it changes the heart of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, I'm not sure it changes the heart of the bill. And I'll let Mr. Schlack comment as to whether it's to his liking. If you look at their Dash 5 amendments, at the back, on the back of it, lines 6 through 10, you know, there's a major function of this committee to review, analyze, and provide recommendations for the financing of the state's interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets. That is something that is central to the activities of Metro and JPAC. You know, we put together, with the collaboration of the local governments in the region, a regional transportation plan that has, I believe, 693 projects in it to be ideally executed over the next 20 years, of which the majority of that is road projects. And so it's true that we are involved in more than just roads and highways, you know, because we look at the transportation system as an integrated whole. It involves sidewalks and, you know, bike lanes, which are also on the road. It involves transit projects as well. You know, certainly more than half of the money that gets spent and, you know, the energy that's spent as well in the region on transportation is on roads.
And just a quick follow-up.
Sure.
Did the original group, I mean, there's a proposal in these amendments for changing the makeup of the group. Did the original group have a representative when it was started, and as it's gone through the years, I think it started in the 70s, maybe, has it had a mass transit or metropolitan planning organization representative on it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Has this follow-up, just that the makeup of the commission as it is, or the committee right now, is basically cities or county, cities, and state, right?
That's my understanding.
Okay, thank you.
One more point. Oh, yes.
I think so that everybody's clear on this Dash 6 amendment, and I didn't do it. But if you notice on the Dash 6 amendment, the first two lines, it talks about in line 2 of the printed bill to delete the rest of that and delete lines 13 through 15. What they did was they took that off the front page of the original bill and put it in the Dash 6 amendment at lines 10 through 14. So LC, for some reason, decided they were going to do a little cut and paste on this thing, but that apparently is how it got there.
Thank you. I see it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I'm proud to represent the Oregon Transit Association. We're a group made up of about 40 providers across the state, all the way from TriMet down to your smallest Vanpool dial-a-ride provider for the handicap. I come to you this week, and perhaps you will remember last week I came to you on another advisory committee, and that was the Rail Advisory Committee. And prior to me sitting down and attempting to entertain all of you and failing, prior to me, you heard a lot of different things about the problems with the Rail Advisory Committee. You heard about making it statutory was going to cost too much, made it inflexible, made it so people wouldn't have enough say in it. You heard information about a sunset, whether that would work, whether it's worth our time. And I told you when I sat down with a terrible analogy, which I thought was so humorous, but I told you that no matter what happened with the Rail Advisory Committee, the people who were interested were going to come. So my client for that issue, Union Pacific, whether it was statutory or simply something put together by ODOT, would come to the meeting. Same goes here. I don't know why this committee has to be put into statute. First of all, understand that when it was started, there was a lot of issues to talk about. There was a lot going on. The groups willingly came together and talked about things. Started to dwindle off because there wasn't as much to talk about. Even to this day, with Matt Garrett, who came to ODOT and tried to reinstitute the whole program, it still kind of sometimes works, sometimes doesn't, and it's all based on whether there's something to talk about. The people who are involved in the issues that deal with transportation are going to come together when they need to. There's no reason to put it into statute. It costs money. It puts restraints on people. There's no flexibility. It costs money. However, if you are going to do it, I have concerns over not only the statutory piece, and I had some Dash 4 amendments. I'm not sure what happened to them. Not only this, not even not just the bill, but even this proposal that was given to you by Mr. Warner. Neither of these two things include someone from the local transit provider. And if we're talking about the transportation system, even though Representative Boone, as you pointed out, this is mostly about roads in the beginning. But if we're talking about roads, we're talking about how to make them last longer, how to make them work better, they should, in fact, include transit. This says transit districts. Randy circled this to me, the blonde, and said, wait, it says it's right here. Not all of the transit agencies are actually transit districts as far as the definition goes. So, either the proposal from Mr. Warner or the statute, should there be one, should include the people who are riding on transit every day on the bus and see how that goes as far as the transportation of groups of people, which is sometimes different than in cars. They should be sitting down with the folks in the community who are elected officials, who are techies, who know this stuff, and talking to them about what they see as a problem and a solution as well. So, that's my testimony.
Thank you. Questions? Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Philosophically, Cindy, I agree with you. I mean, in theory, it makes sense that people will come together, partners will come together when there's a need to get the job done. I must say, at least from my perspective, the more amendments I get to this bill, the more convinced we have a problem that people are not coming together. I mean, all the time and energy that's going into trying to outmaneuver each other on this committee that could be going into projects of statewide significance or Connect Oregon or 50 other things, is frankly very frustrating for me. And I think actually works against the point that philosophically I agree with you with. Mm-hmm. It makes sense that people, that partners would come together when there's a need. That doesn't seem to be occurring, at least in this instance.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, it does occur. The issue is not whether or not these people will all come together, because we will. It's that if there's going to be a mandated right for a group to meet in statute, then we're all stepping on each other to be part of it. Right now, you have your local advisory, your local committees, your local advisory people, your transportation people meeting. Gosh, Joan Plank the other day gave me a chart of all the different committees when we were talking about the Rural Advisory Committee that already meet. I thought, oh, not another one. We already have enough opportunity. It's not a matter of there not being room for Randy to come to these discussions or room for mass transit to come to these discussions. It's a matter that if you put someone in statute, same with when we talked about Rail Advisory Committee versus Freight Advisory Committee, if you put someone in statute, well, all the rest of us are going to step on each other to get there. The rest of the time, you'll probably see us sitting down, working with the elected officials on a local level, with transportation people, with state people, towards the same end. Truly, Representative, is not something we need to be told to go to. But if you're going to tell one group to go there, you got to let us all in.
Representative Hunt.
If I could just follow up on that, give me your sense of why you think not the amendments, but the original bill surface in the first place, that if we have a situation where people, partners, will come to the table to address mm-hmm. problems, why the initiation of the bill in the first place, from your perspective? I realize it's not your bill.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, I'd hate to speculate, and again, it's not my bill, and I don't know the reasons behind it, but since I am somewhat of a pessimist, and I have been here for 15 years, and I have been involved in the Connect Oregon plan, I think it has something to do with elected officials on the local level being left out of Connect Oregon conversations. And I don't think they purposely were. I think it was a byproduct of a lot of conversations in the governor's office that just didn't flow as far as they should have gone, short time schedule. That, in my mind, is one of the keys of why this is a problem. So get those people together, then they can talk about Connect Oregon, and they can send information to ODOT. But you know what? Even if your local officials get together under LOAC, talk about Connect Oregon, and go to ODOT and say, we like this, we don't like this, we like this, we don't like this, it's not going to make any difference on the end of Connect Oregon, because ODOT cannot tell the governor we won't support your bill because LOAC doesn't. So any of the information they could provide just as a regular group, as a regular city or county official, having LOAC to throw them together and make them meet isn't going to change the fact that at least with Connect Oregon, the avenues were what they were, and this wouldn't change that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Cindy, I think you make some very, very good points, and I think it's, frankly, it's commendable, actually, that everybody put as much effort into this thing as they have all along. And I think it does highlight, you know, some issues, but at the same time, you know, even if this were statutory, those issues would still be at the table. You know, this doesn't solve those problems.
Representative Gilman, Representative Burley, bravo. Absolutely. It doesn't solve the problems. Not only that, if it was the cure-all for all the problems, why would we already be saying that it has a sunset?
Having said that, I believe that the legislative assembly, you know, the comments in the Dash 5 about, you know, it is in the public interest to bring the owners of these roads and streets and highways together, and it is in the public interest to have them work together, and I wholeheartedly endorse that statement. But I also, at the same time, look at this, and Cindy, your comments about the cost is right. I'd hate to think how much time the good folks at ODOT are spending and the tax dollars that are being spent facilitating all these things. And, you know, what I'm struggling with in my mind is the rail committee, we had the driver education people in here earlier this week. I was frankly surprised the Safe Route to Schools people didn't want an advisory committee. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, I don't see any policy. I don't see any guidance. When do we have statutory versus non-statutory committees? And, you know, this probably is just the surface of it at ODOT, and this doesn't even tell us which ones are statutory or not, but you know, the bills that we've seen on these statutory committees, some of them come in saying, well, we'll let, you know, the Transportation Commission appoint. And the other ones say, we'll let the governor appoint. And the other ones say this and that. And there's just no, to me, there's no uniform policy on how this should be done. And I think that's the question that this committee ought to be dealing with, and not dealing with these brush fires as they're popping up all over the place.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, actually, you bring up a very good point. You're looking at the same chart I was looking at that said, wait a minute, we don't need another one of these. I would offer to this committee that not only have I been before you by Union Pacific and Oregon Transit Association, my city that I work for also has an interest in this and not just having another committee. But on behalf of all those of my clients, I would welcome the opportunity to work with any of you. Looking back at legislative intent, when we first started taking advisory committees and making them statutory, why did we do it? Looking back at some of the intents, some of the history, which ones have come in, which ones have been sent out, and maybe setting up some kind of system or at least a policy, not statute, we don't need more of those, but a policy as to when the legislature decides to go either way. I would be happy to participate in any of the background research work that I could for you on that on that issue.
Same thing.
Just to represent this end of the dais. In my Health and Human Services Committee, we have heard several bills that have come forward with the same kind of thing, and I think the underlying starting point was the fact that yeah, they're supposed to be doing this, and yeah, everybody knows it, but they're not, and so it's frustrating because nobody can make them do anything. Mm-hmm. So they're, in their frustration, they're coming to the legislature and asking us to say, you must, and you must get along, you must work together, you must do this job. Mm-hmm. And so maybe by putting it in statute, that's how they get there. That's kind of what we saw in some of the commissions and some of the advisory groups in the health field.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boone, if I might, I don't think putting it in statute is going to compel people to come. I think there's either good issues to talk about, you can either play together, or you can't. And making it statutory only means that people won't show up and the state still has to pay for all the copies and the coffee. Sorry.
Talking like a mama.
Representative Burley.
Thank you. Representative Boone, your comments are well made, and I can appreciate that, but perhaps the reason that when these things are percolating out there and they come is maybe it's because of the precedent that this committee and others have set over time by granting and creating these statutory committees. And I absolutely agree with you. I mean, in my real life, when I'm out making some real money, I deal in a lot of different collaborative efforts where, as you know, working for the timber industry, I'm sitting with environmentalists and we're trying to collaborate and come to some agreement. And I could care less if there was a bill out there or not, or anything else that said you will do it, because either the synergy's there or it's not. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't matter what kind of statutes we have. I mean, if people don't want to agree, they won't agree.
Same fire.
Thank you. I think. I was listening to Representative Hunt's comment that, you know, all these amendments and all this stuff going on, you kind of think there is a problem. And then I get frustrated because I think with all these different groups doing all this stuff, none of them are talking to each other, and we're never going to... We're never going to get there if we're just, you know, working at it that way. And I don't know whether the putting them in statute solves the problem. Actually, I'm not really sure it does answer the problem that they're wanting to address. But I just think that there's a lot of wasted effort out there that should be directed in solving the problem instead of outmaneuvering everybody.
Sure. Thank you for comments. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I go back to what Representative Byer and Representative Hunt said as well. Obviously, there was a problem, or at least a perceived problem, that brought this all on. Randy and Cindy, you do have a dog in the fight, if that's the right way to phrase it, because it's your area of interest, but you're not the ones who brought this originally. It's sort of something that's come to you and, okay, well, since it's here, we've got to deal with it. Given that perspective, which is sort of a, if you will, a neutral third-party perspective, going along with what Representative Byer is asking, what do you recommend? Cindy, I hear you saying that if there's an interest, they'll come together, but clearly there's... Whether or not that's happened the way it should, whether or not the genesis of that was Connect Oregon or whatnot, it hasn't happened to the satisfaction of the parties involved. What do you recommend? If not statute, is there a course? Do we just let it go? We let it slide and people will, I shouldn't say come to the census, but people will get together? Or is there another way we should look at that? I heard arbitration earlier. I'm not sure if that to me has fairly negative connotations, but do you have a recommendation in that regard?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Brown, I'm kicking myself right now for ever telling Representative Brown that, in fact, I never come to a committee with just saying no. I always have some kind of compromise because today I don't have one.
Dashboards.
Where are they? But actually, Representative, you bring up a good point, is what do we do instead? I don't think we need to do anything instead. I think the system works just fine. I was taken aback by this need to put the committee into statute. I did not know it was working poorly. I just knew there weren't a lot of issues right now. And as I referred to before, Matt Garrett was brought in to ODOT to start putting together LOAC and getting it going again. And perhaps he could give us some information. He's a Region 1 director now, but maybe he could tell us why. Why couldn't it get going? Was it that people weren't working together? I bet that's a no. Was it that people felt left out? I bet that's a no. Was it that people were tired of just going to meetings? Well, maybe. But I think the real issue is there's nothing to talk about.
Mr. Chair. Randy, do you want to weigh in on that before?
You know, Mr. Chair, Representative Bruin, actually, what I have to say is going to be pretty unsatisfying because I don't really have much of a comment on that. I mean, I have a pretty narrow charge here today, which is if this is going forward to talk about the composition. So don't have a real strong opinion. I will say, though, after I gave a very brief answer to Representative Boone earlier about our past non-participation in this, that's a fair question, and I've only been in this job, you know, a short time, so I don't really know the whole history, but I do know that there's a change going on in attitude about state transportation funding at in our region as a region, not as a set of separate local governments, and I do know that that conversation is elevated in the other MPOs as well, and I think that's why we're here today to talk about the connection between a committee like this and the work that we do. So.
Sorry, again. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know your theory there about the Connect Oregon, but I think the problem does go further back than Connect Oregon. It goes, you know, the most recent last three OTIA projects. I think there's some concern that they're the counties and cities weren't really brought in to develop a proposal to bring to the legislature. And I do think that that's a valid concern that, I mean, they have a stake in this too and should be included. And I don't know if they were not included, if this was not part of their agenda at the LOAC meeting. I mean, I would think that should be. As they were developing proposals, that should have been on their agenda. And if it wasn't, then maybe this is, you know, I don't know whether we can say, you know, that we need to be there, we need them there statute-wise, I don't know, but...
So. Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, first of all, again, that was just a thought that the Connect Oregon issue, because it is so hot right now, might be part of this. But you're right. There's much more than that. However, there are other opportunities. I believe the ACTS had the opportunity for cities and county officials, thank you for nodding, for local officials to get involved. The ACTS provide that opportunity. There are other work and other regional committees. I think there's lots of opportunity. I wish I knew what happened that brought this about. I wish I knew why it didn't work before. Again, maybe it's something to look at. Maybe it's something to ask Matt Garrett about. Maybe it's something for us to sit down as a group and figure out how can we make this work. I think that'd be a good idea. I think it'd be great if ODOT took this proposal they wrote, had us sit down, had us figure out how we're going to make this work and how we're all going to play nice together, but I don't think it should be in statute. Especially not for, what, 4 years?
Any further questions? Thank you very much, committee. And thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else to testify on 2165?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mike MacArthur. I'm the director of the Association of Oregon Counties. I'd like to offer a little perspective, a personal perspective, if you will, not so much that of the director or AOC. As I'm elected a county judge in 1992 in Sherman County, one of the first public roles I played was serving on the LOAC with the for the Association of Oregon Counties with ODOT. Primarily, our function there was to work on functional issues. I served with a few other elected officials and primarily public works officials from the counties and cities, and we worked with ODOT technical people about the nuts and bolts of how the transportation system worked. That went along fine for a few years, and then it kind of faded away under a different director, and has come and gone in those years. I think what we're talking about here is something a little different than that, or quite a bit different than that, frankly. I think there's a real need for some serious long-range thinking about our surface transportation system in Oregon. I currently sit on the Oregon Transportation Plan Advisory Committee, and we're looking ahead to 2020 and beyond about the issues. But I'm one of
I think, only two elected officials on that committee. Of course, those recommendations will go to the Transportation Commission, be codified in the latest Oregon Transportation Plan. It does take into consideration all modes and all parts of the system. Mr. Chairman, when you mentioned earlier your observation that cities and counties aren't the owners of the system. I made the same comment to staff earlier in this meeting, recognizing that the public is indeed the owners. And the public, of course, we can't get them all here to talk about it, so they must be represented. And they are represented by the city council and mayors, county commissioners, and you all, the three. And what I think is important about putting something in statute about cooperation around the transportation system is that the legislature is involved in that. None of these other groups that we're talking about involve the legislature. This would involve the legislature. This would be an opportunity for the legislature to be engaged, in my view, and to recognize a group of people who would then speak to the transportation system from a policy level, representing the owners. And that's why I think this is significant. And I hope that you'll consider it a serious thought on our part, not necessarily to fix something that's broken, but to look prospectively into the future towards something that can make planning for a transportation system and its function work better. Thank you. Thank
you. Questions?
Question.
Yes, Representative Burley.
How are you, Mike? Good to see you again.
Mr. Burley, thank you.
How would, I presume you're referring to the Dash 5 amendments, how exactly would this involve the legislature?
Well, the fact that it's in statute is something the legislature creates. So the legislature, in 4 years, would review it. I assume that we would have some sort of reports coming from this group to the legislature on a more regular basis. That's what I'd like to see. It's not exactly in the statute, but that's my vision of us coming together, working with ODOT cities, coming to you and talking about the system. And then from there, the representatives of the owners can move forward with what is the right policy. What should we be doing about the system? That's the question.
Well, and I can appreciate that. But this committee's discussion has not focused on whether or not, as a committee, we're interested in a report periodically on the status of the state's interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets. I mean, that's not something we're asking for. Would it be of value? Maybe. But that's not been the discussion. The discussion has been whether or not to have a statutory committee. Now, if this report to come back at least once during the interim period is just so that we can referee an issue out there, I don't think that's our role. I don't think the legislature should be doing that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, what my intent in talking about this is that the legislature would be involved in the discussion, not as a referee, but as a participant. And I see this as a way to get the legislature involved.
Oh, sure. By having a seat on the committee?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, by creating it.
Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. Anyone further? Any additional testimony on 2165? Mm-hmm. Close the public hearing on 2165. Anything further to come before the committee?
Yes.
Patrick, we all right? We won't meet. Oh, yeah.
I want to know when we're going to Paisley.
You want to know when we're going to go to Paisley? July 30th. and the way Ways and Means is going, I think we might be here.
I want to go.
Meeting's adjourned. I'll see you on Monday.